The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is The Empowerment Hour. I can promise you that no matter what your background, education, and knowledge on issues, that at least 50 new important points will be shared with you, which will enable you, if you choose, to make healthier choices, better choices about the issues that we're faced with, from health, the environment, the body politic, social issues. In our first hour, I will not have a guest. My guest will be in our second hour. In the second hour, we are going to begin by taking a look at an enormous amount that was shared this past week in the worldwide media on more funding for AIDS, more drugs just around the corner, promising major treatments. We will challenge that with Celia Farber and Michael Terry. With them, I will be asking them important issues, especially Michael, who was a news reporter and press secretary for the past 20 years, and he was a former press spokesperson for the Democratic National Committee, and he's also co-founder and director of Washington Center for Politics and Journalism. He teaches journalism. He's a professor of journalism and about politics. And he's a gay man. And I'm going to ask him how gay males bought into the HIV myth and how the American AIDS Foundation and front groups just are really lobbyists for the drug makers, and how the pro-HIV equals AIDS lobbying works. And what about the local gay presses? What are they afraid of in covering the story honestly? Important issues. So you'll have a chance to hear that, and also I'll be challenging the Clinton Foundation and the Bill Gates Foundation to take an honest look at what all the drugs they've managed to get into people's bodies in Africa. What has that done? We'll look at that. In this hour, I'm going to set time aside to deal with issues that are not dealt with in any major media. Last evening, I looked at all the news talking head shows. They all covered the same identical topics with the same lineup of guests making the same statements. If you were to turn off the sound, and you could have answered the same questions the same way these predictable people do. Then I picked up all the newspapers this morning, the Boston Globe, the Washington Post, the Miami Herald, the New York Times, the New York Daily News, New York Post, USA Today. They all covered the same stories. But what they didn't cover, and I will today, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is bigger than the continental U.S. Have you heard about it? Do you know about it? Do you know why it's important? Do you know how we contribute to it and how we can stop? Also, Vietnam's forgotten war victims. Also, the killing fields of the multinational corporations, how they get away with murder. Also, are veterans being given deadly cocktails to treat post-traumatic stress disorder? And in that light, I'll be doing another commentary on the role of poverty and the corporatization of food. And then I'll give some ideas about what we can do to help all of the homeless vets in the United States. There are 800,000 of them in any given year. And I would also like for those of you who have access to a computer to go to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com, download the 47-minute short film that I did telling the story of the homeless vets and the article that goes with it, and then put it up on your Facebook and get it out to everyone you know. That would be a good thing you can do. It doesn't take a lot of effort. You just take the story and share it with everyone. We need this to go viral in order to help them. But I'll give you the positive solutions, something we can do immediately and directly that can start to see a difference in these people's lives. We don't want to wait for the government. If we do, then it's just going to be a whole series of hearings and postponements and denials and delays, and it may be years. And a lot of these people are not going to wait years. As a group, they have the highest incidence of daily suicide in the United States. So that's what we're going to deal with, things that I believe are important. And, of course, the latest on how to keep us healthy, live longer lives, and prevent overcoming disease. Let us begin. And, again, the information I'm sharing with you, unlike the other health and nutrition programs out there, I don't open up a magazine or open up a newspaper and circle something and cut it and paste it and then say, oh, this is interesting. No, we go to the original scientific literature. For example, the Journal of Pediatrics, the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Naples, led by Professor Stanano. And we find an article based upon good research. It shows when you take in Lactobacillus reuteria, you have a very positive effect on bowel frequency in any infant suffering from functional chronic constipation. Now, you may not have children, you may not care, but for those people who have children who have constipation, it's a big problem. And frequently they'll take either a prescription medication or an over-the-counter drug, and those have serious side effects. This is a natural approach. The authors of the study said that over 60% of the children with constipation had successful treatment and with no side effects. So that's good. That's a new probiotic. It increases the intestinal flora in a good way. And this just adds to something I said earlier in the week. When we take in prebiotics, if you take in cabbage juice, that's a prebiotic. If you eat sauerkraut, that's a terrific healing food. That's very good for people with gastric reflux, ulcers, and infections and inflammation in the intestine. A, it helps turn off inflammation, and B, it helps because it is providing a probiotic into the intestine to lower the bad bacteria, and it's the bad bacteria that contributes to the inflammatory responses. So in effect, you're turning off the bad bacteria and turning on the healing process. So that's good. Next up, dietary fiber may cut Japanese heart disease risk substantially. Now, we have a lot of Japanese Americans. We have a lot of people in Japan who listen to this program and watch it. By the way, you can watch today's program. I'm streaming live from our studio in New York City by going to GaryNoll.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Higher intakes of both soluble and insoluble dietary fibers may reduce the risk of death from cardiovascular disease amongst Japanese men and women, according to this study published in the current issue of the Journal of Nutrition. They followed 23,000 Japanese men and 35,000 women, ages 40 to 79, without any medical history of strokes or heart disease for 2 years. And they found that those individuals who consumed the highest amount of soluble and insoluble. Now, what's the difference? A soluble fiber is one like, blueberries, where it can dissolve down to such a point that much of it can go into the bloodstream, whereas you have fibers that are insoluble, such as oat and from beans, legumes, and nuts, that go right through your system. They act like a little brush, lightly scrubbing the walls of your intestine, getting rid of the accumulated debris that can help prevent that diverticulitis or inflammation. So this was showing that they could substantially reduce the risk of heart disease. Quote, our results constitute supporting evidence that higher intake of both soluble and insoluble fiber, especially fruit and cereal fibers, may contribute to the prevention of coronary heart disease in Japanese men and women. Now, the question is, if this can contribute to lessening the heart disease in Japanese men and women, well, they can do the same thing for every group in the world. There's nothing different with the heart, the GI tract, the blood pressure in a Japanese man or woman, or in a French man or woman, or anyone else. So it's good news to help lower the chance of dying a heart attack in anyone. This is from Elsevier Health Sciences, published in the Journal of Pediatrics, a study that investigates the malicious use of pharmaceuticals and attempts to shed light on this under-recognized problem. What is the problem? Child abuse using pharmaceuticals. Child abuse is a serious problem, and it affects nearly 1 million children that we know of in the United States each year. How many children are abused in families that, rural families, or families where you don't have any social services checking in on people, and you wouldn't know the children were abused? The American Academy of Pediatrics and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services classified child abuse into four categories: neglect, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. None of these, however, clearly includes the abuse by having these children take medications. Dr. Yin at the University of Colorado in the Rocky Mountain Poison Drug Center in Denver reviewed cases of pharmaceutical abuse reported to the National Poison Data Center for an 8-year period. And they report the malicious use of alcohol, painkillers, cough and cold medicines, sedatives, sleeping pills, and antipsychotic medications. Of the more than 1,400 cases studied, 14% resulted in major consequences, including death. Nearly half of the abused children were exposed to at least one sedative. And there were deaths reported. And this study illustrates the seriousness of the abusive use of drugs administered to children. Quote from Dr. Yin: "The malicious administration of pharmaceuticals should be considered an important form of child abuse." Now, what does this mean to all of us? Many of you, I'm hopeful, watched the film I did about 4 years ago called The Drugging of Our Children. I'm doing a sequel to it now. In fact, tomorrow I'll be filming. I have to go down to Florida for the morning. It's one of those in-and-out trips where I'll be filming two experts on how children are taught the wrong messages at home, and it is more about improper parenting. Now, these two are both the best experts I could find in America. They live in different areas, but they're coming together in one place so I can film them. And I've already done all my pre-interviews, so I know their positions. They say that the reason we have so many screwed up children today is because we have so many negligent parents whose own values should be questioned and challenged. The child does not develop themselves. They're not growing up in a vacuum. And parents frequently are not aware of what happens when the wrong messages are given. And then I'm having them compare from historical writings what it was like growing up in the 16th century, 17th century, both in the United States and in Europe. What it was like just 120, 130 years ago when we still had the Little Red Schoolhouse. It was interesting, the very first property I was able to afford was upstate, and it was a small property. Aesthetically, one that I would never select today, but that's all I could. It was in the learning curve, and I had to start somewhere. But the family had owned this since the late 1600s, and the last descendant, an 85-year-old woman, was selling it and staying on what had been part of the property, but they had deeded it off, a house beside a lake. She had a very nice view of this small little lake. There was an old little red schoolhouse on the property when I bought it. And my brother and I, actually my brothers, we decided that all the improvements and repairs we would do on it, we would do with the tools that they used when they built the property. So first we had to find these tools, and we had to look over in Connecticut and Vermont and upstate New York at old antique fairs and yard sales, and over a period of a year we found all these old tools. So everything we did with those tools, because I wanted to see what it would be like if today were 1680 and I had to put a window in, where I had to build a roof. And it was quite a learning experience. I've never talked about it this. I had a I ought to write about this sometime, because it was my first real homesteading project. There was no good soil. It was called Stone Ridge for a reason. It was up on Buck Road in Stone Ridge. There was just no dirt at all. It was just all rocks. So I'm thinking, how can I deal with this? So I went across the road and I drained out this pond. And then I waited and waited and waited until it dried out enough. I could get a bulldozer in, and I took tons of the muck, which was rich decomposed organic matter, and drove it across the road and put it in this area that became the garden. You can see all this up on GaryNoll.com under my photos. And you'll see my brothers and all the friends that were up there sharing this experience. And kind of remind you of Woodstock with a meaning, and Woodstock without the drugs. It was just a fun experience. And you see the organic garden, and it was about 18 inches of topsoil. But that topsoil came from the muck. And I had a chance to speak on many occasions with this wonderful senior citizen about what was life like when she was growing up, because she was born in the 1800s. And she told me about life and how rough it was in that area, where you got snowed in and you couldn't go anyplace for 5 months because there was just no roads to get out. There was no road clearing equipment, things we take for granted. Back then, when she was growing up, you got up in the morning, you were really cold. You had to start a fire from scratch. You had to make sure your fire was dry, and if it was wintertime, sometime you get a rainstorm, everything was soaking. You didn't have insulation. In fact, when I was taking out some boards in the barn, I found that whoever had been sleeping in the barn had put newspaper and books in between the walls as some form of insulation. You know, it was cold. And what they ate and how they spent their time, crafts were very important, and how they got their education. They were in that little school, and what did they study? And what were the standards? Here was a woman, her and her family, could speak and write three languages. She studied Latin, things that you would never think of. They were extremely articulate. And then you look back at the way that people at the beginning of the 18th century, those who had been to school, those who were studied, were extremely intellectual and very articulate. And they wrote letters. Today, very few people write letters. Anyhow, that was just an aside. That was just about the little red schoolhouse. But it was about parenting. And the way that people were parents, they took responsibility for what lessons a child needed to actually survive, because we must not forget there were times in American history where your survival was dependent upon knowing how to do things. You didn't have a choice. Last evening, I took a break. We were upstairs filming and or editing a new segment that goes up on the website Monday. I just finished writing a new article. It'll be up Monday. And a new film. It'll be up Monday. This one's not about... it's actually about two things. I'll just wait till Monday and share that with you. You know, we took a break late, and I saw the last film that was playing down at the Lincoln Center. It was about something about deep to the bone. And boy, it would have reminded me of some of my relatives and people I knew growing up in West Virginia. It was about people down in, I guess it was Tennessee. And it's a really worthwhile story to see, about a young 17-year-old whose father has disappeared. And the sheriff comes and says, your father's got to be at a trial hearing in 2 weeks, and if he's not, you're going to lose your house. So then the frantic search for the father. And it takes through all these relatives who have all degrees of dysfunction and anger. But all throughout this, she realizes that she may end up losing the house, and hence be literally thrown outside. So she starts teaching her younger brother, who's 14, and younger sister, 10, how to survive. So she shows them how to kill a squirrel and dress it down, and the guy doesn't want to do it. No, you got to stick your hands in that gut and pull out the guts. I'm not going to do that. You know, What are you afraid? I'm not afraid. I just don't want to do it. Well, imagine today in most suburbs telling a kid, a teenager, okay, stick your hands in the gut of that squirrel or that rabbit and pull out the innards and strip off the skin and because that's your dinner. I'm not going to do it. I'll call an order and a pizza. I'm not going to kill a damn rabbit. Well, I want to tell you, where I grew up, people ate rabbit. People ate squirrel all the time. Gross me out. I wouldn't do it, but I've watched them do it. And they did it very matter-of-factly. And imagine what would happen if you don't have any survival skills. Well, I want to tell you, most Americans today, if they can't buy something, they couldn't make something. They couldn't grow something. Do you think that most people could move back to the land and survive? I want to tell you, you think it's easy going out to the country and planting some seeds and having a nice organic garden and taking it to market and sell or eating it? No, it's not. You'd probably fail 95% of the time. You wouldn't understand. The animals are going to get it. The grubs are going to get it. The insects are going to get it. A lot of seeds won't sprout. The weather will work against you. There are a thousand things that if you don't know, you will end up paying a terrible price for. Now imagine that you could be a person in the Great Prairies and you missed the opportunity to get across the Great Divide. You missed the chance before the snow hit to get over to the other side of the Rockies. Now you're between a rock and a really bad place because you can't go forward and you can't get back because you won't have the resources to do so. Now, you've got an animal to feed, probably several. You've got a family to feed, and you have no place to go. What are you going to do? What are you going to eat? So then the people who had been taught from early on how to survive were the ones who survived, and those who didn't died. And we have no idea how many tens of thousands died because they weren't prepared. So the little things growing up, how do you survive in a world where most people are not taught manners, or taught how to communicate honestly and openly, are not taught what to do before crisis hits, what I call watching Katrina, which means that for those who could get out of harm's way, should have gotten out of harm's way instead of watching it, with some almost reality series mindset that you're watching something on television as it's coming at you instead of understanding that you're not going to win this round. Get out of the place. And I've said this is also true for people. I saw the paper today, people swimming in the Gulf of Mexico. Why? Because yesterday the government removed the tar balls. I see. So let me just put this in a way that everyone in this audience could understand. The government removing tar balls out of the water so you today can go in and swim is like someone taking, let's say, a large ladle and taking the crap out of your toilet and say, you can go ahead and drink from the water now. That's how smart our White House is, the president and everyone else. They're completely insane. And you are too if you trust and believe anything anyone in government says. All right? It's just amazing how stupid people can act. I mean, they must get up in the morning, read something, watch something, because if you watch Fox, for every moment you watch Fox, I actually did the scientific, this is a real scientific experiment, for every 60 seconds you watch Fox, you lose 30 points on your IQ. So it doesn't take long before you realize you don't have a lot going for you. But there was a time when people actually knew parenting, actually knew what was important to share with a child. But today, if you don't have to struggle, if you don't have any hassles, if you see everything as just utopian and upward and onward, if everybody is just based upon a consumer-based society, if everybody thinks they're the beginning and end of the world, if everybody thinks that every emotion and feeling they have is real and someone should coddle to it, pay attention to it, and give them a big wet kiss because of it, then what happens when the person meets the real world with real problems and real crisis? They're not prepared for it. Therefore, that child has been not given what they need. So I'm filming that tomorrow for a whole new look at what's wrong with our American children. The film is unusual. I'm calling it Generation Zero. And put it in proper perspective. I already have 120 educators, philosophers, sociologists, lots of parents from all over the United States who've given their input on it. Less on the drugs this time, except I am doing a very definitive look at the complete fraud of the DMS for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. There is no science behind it. Zero. There are no conditions that are based upon brain chemical imbalance like bipolar and schizophrenia. That is all made up. This is all fraud. All of it. But I have the professors from Harvard and Yale. They're saying it because they've looked at the science. So all these new conditions, they don't exist. Until you believe they do by watching the media and them telling you, oh, do you feel left out? Do you feel lonely? Well, then you have shyness disorder. Do you feel uncomfortable when you're in large crowds? Then you have social anxiety disorder. Do you get angry at authority figures? Then you have authority defiance disorder. So unless you're willing to be completely non-emotional about everything, you will fit into a disorder to which the state, can mandate that you take a form of prescription or form of therapy, which is almost always a prescription. So at every level, and I show this with pieces of a puzzle coming together, I show that the state medical boards, the psychiatric dominance, which is, psychiatry is just a voodoo science. There's no science behind psychiatry. In the hands of gifted therapists who are compassionate and understanding, they can certainly help people understand why they're acting or overacting. But it's not about them helping through electroconvulsive therapy, lobotomies, or anything else, or drugs to get a person normal. They can't show you a person they've ever gotten normal. But that's what I'm dealing with in the new film. So, working on that tomorrow. And finally, mercury, the silent epidemic, is killing American dental professionals. This is from Aaron Turpin of Natural News. Quote, dental amalgams known as silver or mercury fillings are known to be a health threat to people who've had them installed in to fill in their cavities. From the moment you step into the average American dental office, you're likely being exposed to large amounts of mercury vapor. It gets worse for those who work in that environment every day. Quote, I was diagnosed with heavy metal toxicity to mercury and lead in May 2004 after a year of testing, says Karen Palmer. Not only did I have silver mercury fillings in my mouth, I handled amalgam daily at my job as a dental assistant. Unquote. Well, Karen's story is sadly not unique. Studies of dental offices and personnel have revealed startling safety issues in regards to mercury exposure. In a large sampling of U.S. dentists, 10% were found to have high levels of mercury, and OSHA's study also found that up to 16% of U.S. dental offices exceed their standard of mercury in the air on equipment. So, become a holistic dentist. Work in a holistic dentist's office. There is no mercury, except the mercury they safely remove from people's mouths. And if you have mercury, silver fillings, have them replaced. Because every chew, every piece of food you take into your mouth, your teeth, when they compress, are allowing mercury vapors to leave, and they're going to be inhaled, and that can pass the blood-brain barrier, and that can destroy neurons. One final thing, 90% of scientists backing Avendia, diabetes drug, had financial ties to drug companies. Quote, researchers who have published studies favorable to the controversial diabetes drug of India had a financial stake in the issue, according to a study conducted by researchers from the Mayo Clinic. The Mayo Clinic is one of the few research organizations that does not accept corporate funding. Sales of GlaxoSmithKline's best-selling drug of India plunged in 2007 after evidence emerged linking the drug to an increased risk of heart attack and death. These report sparked a debate over the drug's safety that continues this day. In an analysis of more than 200 studies and articles and editorials and letters published in scientific journals, since then, the Mayo Clinic researchers have concluded that financial conflicts of interest continue to play a major role in that debate. Fully 87% of all authors who expressed positive views about Avendia had financial ties to the company. And another 7% had ties to other pharmaceutical companies involved with diabetes drugs. So that's almost 95%. So just remember that when you're listening to these experts on television and you're reading their views, they're biased. I'm Gary Knoll, your home for progressive thought, for the independent thinker. Food for the mind. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you, either listening or watching or both, to this program. In studio, we have Kara Lee, Program Director for Progressive Radio Network, and producer Bill Thompson. Bill, we'll start with you.
Had an interesting event. I had jumped into a cab a few weeks ago, heading over to the office, and the driver was Middle Eastern, and his English was rather broken, and I told him where I wanted to go, 83rd and Broadway, and I said, by the way, he said, I can't talk now. I said, what's the matter? He says, I'm listening radio. I said, what are you listening to? He says, Gary Knoll Show, best show. You be quiet, listen to. You learn something. And I'm serious. I said, well, yeah, Gary's a good guy. No, he's the best. And I wanted to, you have an audience out there that is unbelievable. In fact, the Arbitron ratings for your program are up 300%. This is an unheard of increase. I mean, I've heard of 2 or 5%, but 300%. I've never heard of anyone, any show, any program, jumping to 300%. You're beating everyone in prime time, in drive time combined. Even Democracy Now is down, like all the others: Beck, Oberman, Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, all of them. What's going on here?
Three hundred percent. Do you have the figure?
Yep.
Let me see it. Which book is this?
This is the Arbitron book.
Spring book.
Mm-hmm. Spring book, right.
Winter to spring.
Right.
Wow, you're right. 355%. Never had a jump like that before.
No one's ever had a jump like that.
All right, let's... I can only speculate. I can give you a subjective answer. At the beginning of the show today, I said that I was watching all the media last evening, and this morning I read all the primary print media. They were all the same, meaning they covered the same stories. At the end of it, I asked myself, how many empowerment points can I take away from this? None. I mean zero. Bad news, but no good news. This person's a problem, but what's the solution? Charlie Rangel's got a problem. They falsely accuse this woman of racism. Now they're doing reverses. But at the end of it, it is more of watching a train wreck than it is of actually learning something.
That's correct.
And I believe at a time of major crisis where we are seeing our major institutions betray us, and the leaders of those institutions, who are more often than not self-serving, who we can no longer trust their word and judgments. They have acted unilaterally against the best wishes of the people, our politicians and government, the state government, the bloated bureaucracies. For example, just one example, the wrong questions were asked. There was recently a report, and it broke this Monday in the Washington Post. It's a part of a series about our secret government. Not the CIA, but rather, and not the National Security Agency, but rather over 1,800 separate departments and agencies in the government and 1,300 in the private sector that employ at least 800,000 people, spending countless amounts of money that no one is overseeing at all. And these people can do whatever they want because they all have top security clearance. So let's just say you were one of those people, okay, and you decided to arrest Kara on a street in New York.
Okay.
And a cop saw this. A detective saw it. First class, second class detective came up and said, hold on, what are you doing? All you have to do is say, national security, and you dominate. They cannot stop you. They cannot interfere with you because the way our current structure is, the police on the beat are the low end of the totem pole. The detectives are right above them. Then you go through your different lines, a lieutenant and captain, a major, up to commander, division commander. All of those have no power at all unless they see a crime being committed that is an obvious crime, but they can't intercede if someone flashes a badge and says national security. They step down. So imagine now that you have people who have access to all of your phone records, all of your bank accounts, all your tax statements, your medical records, anything they want, they have, that they're collecting data on every single American. This was in the story. They process over 1.8 billion phone calls and emails on a weekly basis, which means that no human being in the United States can make a phone call, text, without a person looking at it. But they made it legal. Guess who one of the architects of making that legal was?
I have no idea.
Barack Obama.
Oh, really?
Yes. They took away habeas corpus. So they can arrest anyone, keep you in indefinite detention under any suspicion that you may be associated with any form of terrorist activity. What do they consider terrorist activity today?
That's a question. I'd like to know that.
It is so broad that peaceful demonstrations, environmental protests, every environmental organization in the United States is now considered a terrorist organization. They're all infiltrated. Everything they do is monitored. Every peace organization is monitored. Every member has a profile on them. So if you raise your voice at any time in dissent of anything, you're now targeted. By one of these government agencies? No. A private agency.
You say private, non-government? This is a private...
These are all non-government. These are people who founded corporations, who then went to people in Congress and gave them large amounts of money, and then said, we will provide this private service, or this private service. That's who's out there. That's what they're doing. And the average person is clueless about it. So you will not see this being rescinded. You will see this increasing because no organization is ever created that puts itself out of business by saying, we've done our job, we're no longer needed.
Right.
Every agency of government, local, and that's one of the reasons a lot of people are angry. When you say you're angry, the media missed the story. The Washington Post missed the story. The real story was not that we have these super secret agencies. I've known that. I've reported on it. I've broken major stories on it. My 1989 story was the first story in the United States in any major magazine showing the intentional testing of biological weapons on American citizens with impunity. And the verification of that was, my source now I can tell, was Congressman Markey. But nothing came from that, yet it was never refuted. In one case, they sailed a ship up and down the coast of California near San Francisco and released a sarin chemical into the air, and people in hospitals spiked in the sarin toxicity with man dying. His son knew something was wrong. He's a lawyer, kept on the case. Years later, was able to get the medical and autopsy report, proved that it would the bacteria killed him. But the government wouldn't give it, this man permission to sue it. So as a result, this was a story that I broke about this man and his dad's death and all the files and the doctors. So we allow this to happen. We have a secret government in the United States run by private for-profit individuals. And they don't care whether you're conservative or liberal. It's irrelevant. They're making money, billions of dollars. So that's the story is, why didn't the American media realize that behind the buildup to the war in Iraq was a lot of private contractors who were going to make an enormous amount of profit from that war? Because the United States government was not going to have its own historical, commissaries, quartermasters, go in and put up the tent cities, build the cafeterias and the showers and the toilets, provide the vehicles to transport communication equipment and supplies. It was all outsourced at astronomical charges. For example, to wash one simple little bag of clothes, Halliburton charges $100.
Wow.
Per bag. Now, think of how many bags of clothes they wash. That's per week. Now, imagine what it cost, 50 cents. That's all profit. And they work on profit plus. So when you look at the fact that the media missed the story of there was no weapons of mass destruction, but how the media was complicit in the buildup of the war in Iraq, and how these private for-profit secret corporations getting all these contracts were there to be the experts. So when a lieutenant colonel or a general was on Fox or MSNBC, it was on all the networks, they saying, no, Saddam Hussein represents a real threat because he could go after Israel and he's got... These were all paid. These were all shills. Never trust any one of those so-called expert military people on television. Never. They're shills. They're men for hire. And that's been proven. So then you have to say, well, my God, what can I trust? Who can I trust? Because everywhere I look, I'm being manipulated, lied to, sold something. And that's how our government works today. So now, on the one hand, we're finally becoming aware of how insidious, how pernicious, how invasive our loss of rights are. So then a couple people stand up and say, hold on a second. Didn't we have something called the Constitution? Are you allowed to do this? Are you allowed to eviscerate habeas corpus? And the neocons say, yes, you are, but you don't have a counterbalancing group of Democrats and liberals saying, no, you're not. You have members of the very liberal side saying, no, you're not. But then they're immediately expunged from any dialogue. They're not invited on any debates. So the debates then become between the right of center liberals, Democrats, and the right of center Republicans, conservatives, both holding pretty much the same identical view. Don't do anything that threatens the people in power and the military-industrial complex, with the exception of a few like Dennis Kucinich, but you won't see Dennis invited into those dialogues. You won't see Ron Paul invited into those dialogues. You certainly wouldn't see me invited into that dialogue. So instead, you get the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer for the Washington Post who appears on Keith Olbermann always with a smile and saying nothing. I mean, it's embarrassing how innate this concept is that we're not challenging these people. And hence we see no truth. So if you are radicalized, no one wants to hear from you because you bring then controversy to the table. Oh, we don't want to bring a controversial person. So what happens is we do not have voices that are independent and progressive. You don't see the Greens, the Constitutionalists, the Peace Party. You don't see the Libertarians, with rare exception. You don't see, and then within the Libertarians, you've got the John Stossel Libertarians, and you've got the more moderate Libertarians. But you don't see these people. You won't hear them. As a result, nothing ever changes. So when it comes, for example, to the people saying, we need medical reform, but don't interfere with the free market process of the insurance industries and the pharmaceutical industries, it's being made by both Democrats and Republicans because both of them got money from them.
Exactly.
The American public are not stupid. So now you stand up and say, hold on a second. Is your health care actually going to make us healthier? Well, no, that's not important.
No.
It's going to save lives? No, that's not important. Going to prevent heart disease? No. Overcome it? No. Are you going to cover everyone? No. Is it going to be more expensive? Yes, but we're going to say no. Then you start realizing that you're being tag-teamed. Now, as long as the American public does not look at the issues, it will not be informed. And as long as you only listen or look from one side, through the lens of the ideology of left or right, you will not see the full picture. Hence, at some point, a person surrenders the need to be taught something by people who are clearly propagandists, whether right or left, and they go to independent status. Then suddenly you're embarrassed and ashamed because of how you've been played and allowed yourself to be played because of your own intellectual laziness, your lack of honest curiosity about seeing the truth. Now you see the truth. Now you're angry. Now you go out and protest. So what do? If you protest as a Republican, you'll have that sponsored on the right. If you're protesting as a liberal, you'll have that sponsored on the left. But what if you're protesting as an independent? Ah, then you're one of those racist radical nut jobs, one of those teabaggers. So then they take the most radical elements within that, and then they paint the whole field because that discredits them. And historically, they could have gotten away with it because then some of the nut job candidates, and there are some out there, who shouldn't be running for anything except for their own statements.
Yeah, run away.
Yeah. they have a stink. They'll never be able to outrun. They then continue to focus upon them as if they are the only voice and the only face instead of the millions who are saying, hold on a second, that person doesn't represent me. I wouldn't vote for that person. Listen to what I have to say. And they will not. They cannot. Because if they stop and allow independent thinkers into the mainstream media, it would cause such a revolution of thought to those who are still connected to the right and left that you would see a wholesale rush for the exit into the world of independent thinking. Everything that's going to save the planet is in the progressive movement. Everything that's destroying the planet is either conservative, Bill Clinton conservative, or George Bush Republican, which are both the same. So at the end of the day, there comes a time when if you turn on Republican and Democrat radio, you're not getting anything that's empowering. And it's almost all bad news. I promise people every show that they will be empowered. I will give them information in a wide variety of topics. Already today, I've made over 60 points that if you choose to, you could use this information. From the fact that we're not parenting correct because we're not spending quality time and we're not focusing on lessons in life that are important. We're teaching our children how to be consummate consumers so they can grow up and get a lot of things. Succeed so you can get the big job, so you can have the house and the bling and, you know, you can be a somebody. But we're not teaching them how to communicate, how to help the world, to look at those in need, to realize that when you help the poor, you help what you may be become. Instead, we don't care about the poor. We won't admit that, but you don't see us making any move in the United States to help the poor and the middle class. Instead, we just keep enamored by the good times that the rich and upper middle classes are having.
Or celebrities.
Yeah, and that's where we're focused on. So now imagine that you've got a place you can go to that is not ideological, but rather information based upon what we can do.
There's one other thing you add to it, Gary, and that is you actually take away fear. And I think you need to nail that. I think you've nailed it, but I would like to say that. In other vehicles, it's always you need to be afraid of them, you need to be afraid of this, you need to be afraid of that. And you are empowering people to be themselves and not to be afraid of anything.
Well, to coalesce with other people. I believe that the future is based upon cooperation, not competition. Every day I'm recalculating in my mind this sustainable homestead project, and as you know, I'm getting very close to next week signing on that. And then begins a real interesting journey to show people how you can maintain your individual needs and identity, but also where you can share with other people in such a way that you each of your strengths becomes another person's strength. And we haven't done that in decades in the United States. You would have to go back to the Great Depression to see that.
Yes.
And so we have some lessons to relearn from the greatest generations and previous that we thought were corny, out of date, not hip. You know, we didn't want anyone in our front lawn, backyard, you know, and now we're going to be sharing the future. The future can only be held together with a quality of life if people drop the egos and drop this mad dash, rush to the gold, and start to get back to what is important and real for happiness and well-being. Kara.
Well, I completely agree with that, Gary, first of all. I also wanted to come in here and make a quick announcement, just saying that right now we're looking for full-time help for a vitamin fulfillment position. You'd be helping with shipping and getting out all of the orders that happen here. And if you have some experience with that and are good at multitasking, please give Bill a call at 646-926-5439. Again, that number is 646-926-5439. We're also still looking for volunteers to help with moving and putting some new items and boxes and moving them over to 92nd Street. And again, give Bill a call, 646-926-5439. And then, you know what, Gary, I found an article that is actually really similar to what we were just talking about a second ago in terms of corporations and empowering people and what they can do to stand up. And this has to do with the Gulf oil spill and how Obama and the Coast Guard aren't really allowing people and journalists to get in and actually report about what's going on there. As a matter of fact, journalists and independent observers of the oil cleanup in the Gulf of Mexico could be fined up to $40,000 and charged with a felony if they get too close to the cleanup areas. There is an activist group called Seize BP that wants to let the authorities know that they can't put a muzzle on such independent information gatherers. And, Gary, I wanted to know what you think people can do about this. How can we get the word out about what's really going on and let other people know?
I believe that what we should do is realize that the game is already won. The government will have commissions of handpicked people, just like the Warren Commission, which is a complete fraud. Anyone with a brain knows that Lee Harvey Oswald could not have done that. But as long as you keep keeping the lie under lid, then you can. We now know that there are multiple fractures in the foundation of the seafloor. We know that there's multiple leaks. We're also aware that there are over 24,000 capped and abandoned wells that are corroding. We know that several of those will end up causing leaks, and many could cause massive leaks, and releasing both methane and oil. They don't want us to be able to see that.
And didn't you say the other day, Gary, that the cap that they put on is actually making problems worse?
Here's how it works. It's pressure per square inch. If the pressure maxed out at over 10,000 pressure per square inch or higher, that would be a good thing. But if it's not maxing out, it means that the pressure is being released and relieved by other points where the oil and methane is escaping. Now, the actual amount of pressure per square inch should be 19,000, not 9,000. And then this week, they arbitrarily lowered it to 6,700. Why? Because guess where the cap pressure was at? 6,700. So they simply made 6,700 the new goal. That's the fraud, the lies, the deception of these people. So we are literally becoming a fascist and police state. And if people doubt that, just take a look at what's out there. Let me share this with you. This is from Robert Kohler from CommonDreams.org. The secrecy state, quote, this is a short piece. Under the I hate government, let's drown it in the bathtub administration of George Bush and Dick Cheney, the security state swelled to such enormous proportions it required more than a dozen investigative journalists from the Washington Post 2 years to fathom its size and shape. In our otherwise financially bankrupt society, where we could afford virtually nothing that actually helps people, money is no object to the security state. Thus, in the name of national security, as Dana Priest and William Arkin tell us in Top Secret America, quote, their harrowing tale of government gone wild, 1,271 government organizations and 1,931 private companies are currently in the Homeland Security counterterrorism intelligence game. These agencies either expanded their operations vastly or sprang anew from the head of the Cheney, in the wake-up of 9/11, when secret government-like torture bloomed. quote, at least 20% of the government organizations that exist to fend off terrorist threats were established or refashioned in the wake of this. And now some 854,000 people, according to the article, now hold top secret security clearances. They generate and recirculate more data than anyone has the least idea of what to do with. The National Security Agency, for instance, intercepts 1.7 billion emails, phone calls, and other communications every single day. And it's highly debatable, as the writers point out repeatedly, whether we're the least bit safer because of it. Indeed, the government's massive harvest of classified data seems to jam the wheels of government more than anything else, burying significant bits of information amid reams of trivia. The Post does an admirable job detailing the staggering dimensions of the security state, but I find myself, as I read about it, assaulted with questions the article doesn't take on, beginning, of course, with the legitimacy of the counterterrorism in the first place, at least as an overweening preoccupation of government. Another term for it is paranoia, and it isn't healthy. If nothing else, its rationality is deeply flawed. An enormous subdivision of the military-industrial complex, including, as Arkin has stated, the powerhouses in the defense industry, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, has emerged for the purpose of global data extraction on the assumption that America's enemies exist in objective independence from our own activities, that our national security is more a function of intercepting a whispered plot to cause harm than, say, curtailing our own murder of civilians in the war on terror. The imploding intelligence industry, of which torture is one piece, is the hidden side of the war on terror, the war to promote terror, and another manifestation, so it strikes me, of our unexamined urge to play God. Man must be insane, wrote the French Renaissance essayist Michael Montaigne. You can't be, he can't make a worm, but he makes gods by the dozens. And in the nation state, we have the ultimate faux triumph of lunacy, a stumbling sociopath that is, or strives to be, both all-powerful and all-knowing. The money we've poured into the intelligence industry in the last decade, expanding exponentially the worst excesses of the Cold War, has done more than gum up the wheels of government. It has usurped much of what has remained of its legitimacy. The more secrets a government keeps from us, the less it belongs to us. In the secrecy state, no one extols the value of openness. But a government that isn't open is not a democracy. What, indeed, are these secrets that only insiders have access to? How much do they concern legitimate and temporary matters of national security? And how much do they merely shield unsavory truths about the status quo? How much secrecy, in other words, is enough? Consider, for instance, one of the most high-profile security breaches of recent months, the WikiLeaks release of a classified video showing a U.S. Apache helicopter crew strafing Iraqi civilians on a Baghdad street, killing a dozen, including two Reuters journalists, and laughing while they did it. Quote, oh yeah, look at those dead bastards, unquote. So what did they do? The 22-year-old Army intelligence analyst, Private Bradley Manning, the apparently conscience-stricken whistleblower who passed the video on to Wikileaks, has recently been charged with 12 counts of illegal dissemination of classified data, just about the most heinous crime it's possible to commit in the secrecy state. It's far worse, for instance, than merely killing or torturing civilians. So what this means is that killing the civilians and laughing...
That's okay.
That's okay. You can kill anyone you want. Man, woman, or child, you can kill anyone if you're in the security state.
Right.
But report about it, and they'll throw your ass in jail.
Does the word Gestapo come to mind here?
Huh?
Does the word Gestapo come to mind here?
Well, that's the new administration. That's the old administration. That's the Clinton, Bush, and Obama administration. And you know the smartest of them all? Oh. Obama.
Yeah.
Because he's a constitutional lawyer.
Right.
So he knows that everything they're doing is illegal, immoral, and wrong. So the next time they tell you something, just remember... Ask him, when did anyone in the major media take this story up? When did they talk about the 1.3 million dead Iraqi civilians? And what moral responsibility do we have for their deaths? The depleted uranium deaths? Why isn't that in the news? Because the security state won't allow it. You never see bad news about the civilians in Iraq or Afghanistan. You never see their struggles. And that's the way we play it.